Welcome to the You Are Not Broken podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kelly Casperson, a board-certified urologist, thought leader, and conversation starter on midlife living, hormones, and sexuality. Enjoy the show.
Thank you for joining me on Women's Power Hour today. And today it's a little bit later because our guest today is Dr. Kelly Casperson, who is over the pond, over in the States. And we're going to be talking today about testosterone and also genitourinary syndrome of menopause. She's a urologist and also does a podcast, You Are Not Broken. And we're both here to help women, empower them, and also to answer your questions. Testosterone is always a topic that really gets a lot of women sort of discussing, and I've had already loads and loads of questions. And I'm going to start answering some of these questions, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what testosterone is, because we hear a lot about estrogen, we hear a lot about progesterone, and those are our sort of dominant female sex hormones. However, we also, as women, need testosterone. And actually, our estrogen is made through what we call our androgen pathway. So our ovaries and adrenal glands produce testosterone, and it gets converted to estrogen through enzyme aromatase through the pathway, so that we, as women, have most of our testosterone converted into our female sex hormones, whereas for men, that doesn't occur. So for most of you, for many of you who may not be aware of that, that's why we, as women, it's also very important for us to have testosterone on board. We need it for muscle mass, for metabolism, for mental health, sharpness, for the health of our sort of genitourinary tracts, libido, desire. So, you know, one of the questions I get asked about here in the UK is, why are GPs reluctant to prescribe testosterone, or why is it so difficult getting hold of it? Now, there are a few reasons for this. One, there is no female licensed testosterone product within the NHS. The only female licensed product we have in the UK is Androfem, which is shipped in from Australia. And most of the time, this is prescribed, you know, via a private doctor like myself. Or, you know, if your GP does prescribe, it will probably be under the recommendation of a menopause clinic, or if they feel comfortable in prescribing it, it will be a male testosterone or one licensed for men, like Testogel, Tostran, Testim, which they then titrate according to a female dose. So that's why, you know, GPs find it hard to prescribe, because they don't have the access to a female licensed testosterone. Also, when they are prescribing the male version, they are prescribing in what we say is an off-licensed way. And so what happens is that they are taking on board that risk along with you in prescribing it. And also, when we prescribe testosterone, it is usually the tertiary, the third hormone prescribed. So for example, if you are a woman with a womb, you will get prescribed estrogen, progesterone, and then testosterone, because we need to boost those estrogen levels before we can start prescribing the testosterone. So Kelly's here. Let's get her on. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
I know. Well, for you, for us, it's afternoon. And, you know, I really appreciate you coming, waking up early for us. But you've had a bit of a time change as well. Is that right over there?
We had a time change like last weekend. So
okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because I've been sort of singing your praises. You know, you're a urologist, you know, out to empower women, you know, answering, covering topics which not all doctors feel comfortable doing, you know, sex, libido, hormones, you know, pelvic floor, all of those kind of things. So just give us a little bit of background and insight into you, because I've only seen you also on Instagram. I love the work that you do. And so it's really nice to connect with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today. So I'm a urologist. There's about 1,000 female urologists in the United States now, or about 9% of all urologists in America. About 4 years ago, I started a podcast after I learned a lot about female sexual health. And the reason I learned a lot about that is because I had a patient who was being challenged with that, and I didn't know how to help her. Okay. And I just assumed the gynecologist knew. It turns out they don't know. And the more I learned, the more I'm like, I can't keep this to myself. I need to talk. I can't help enough people coming to my clinic. So that's the podcast is about 4 years old now. It's called You Are Not Broken. Started the Instagram to just to get more people to listen to the podcast. And so that's going well. and came out with a book. It's going to be in its second printing in September, and it's called You Are Not Broken, Stop Shooting All Over Your Sex Life. So it's not out right now. You can pre-order it on Amazon, but we've taken it down for its second edition.
And, just for those who don't know what a urologist is, you know, just because often we associate that more with male patients. You know, I mean, and maybe many people have come across urologists because they've been, you know, their male partners have been referred there or they know somebody's gone there. So just talk a little bit about what a urologist is and why it's important also for female health.
Yeah.
Or why you're, you know, why urologists are important. Yeah.
So urologists are surgeons of the genital urinary tract, kidneys, ureters, bladder, prostate, classically the male sexual structures, scrotum, testicles, penis, but more and more, because urologists are very well trained in sexual function, we're very well trained in testosterone. So more and more urologists are comfortable with female organs. I treat bladder leakage, prolapse, you know, all of those issues. Clitoral phimosis is a big one for orgasm issues. The skin of the clitoris can come over the clitoral head and cause either pain or decreased sensitivity. So urologists are very comfortable with both hormones and sexual health.
And you know, I think some of the things that you mentioned there, like clitoral phimosis and testosterone, you know, it's something that we're learning more and more about, particularly when it comes to testosterone, how important it is for body to function well, and especially when we get to perimenopause and menopause. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of women are almost surprised to hear is how important testosterone is for the female body.
We have to take a step back, right? Because so many people don't know testosterone is in all bodies.
Yes.
We've really done a disservice in two ways. Number one, we call them sex hormones, which is very dismissive of their importance in the brain, in the bones, in all of the body. But they labeled them sex hormones in the 40s and 60s when they were discovering what they did, specifically in the testicles and ovaries, right? So number one, we labeled them sex hormones. That's a problem. And then number two, we gendered them. We said estrogen's for women and testosterone's for men. And that basically erased the possibility that men can have issues with low estrogen, women can have issues with low testosterone, because it's in every body. And I'd say the third thing is, since estrogen's the female hormone, we erased the fact that we actually have more testosterone in our bodies than estrogen. I didn't learn that in medical school. I had to learn that part in, you know, my journey now of sexual health and hormones.
Similar.
We have more testosterone, you know, in our bodies, I mean, than estrogen.
I was just going to say, similar for me, you know, here in the UK, we have GPs, and I'm a GP who then, because of the need for, you know, more specialized care in perimenopause and menopause, went away to kind of learn more about it, and particularly around sort of sexual health, libido, orgasm, you know, sort of those kind of aspects of female health, which, you know, because growing up almost felt like when you got to in your mid-40s and 50s, sex was off the table. But actually, it's so on the table, you know, literally almost sometimes, you know, it should be and could be. And I think the whole thing about testosterone growing up as well as a medical doctor is you do get it pigeonholed that it is a male hormone, a male hormone, a male hormone. You're not really told that much that as women, you may benefit from it, or you actually have some, and actually your estrogen is made through that aromatase pathway. You know, we don't get told that.
Yeah, if we want to be technically accurate, the ovaries make testosterone and androgens, which then make estrogen. We say the ovaries make estrogen. Like, not technically. Technically, they make androgens, which then get converted to estrogen.
Which gets converted.
Introducing FirmTech, the ultimate smart erection ring for men's sexual health and well-being. Just like women use vibrators to enhance their intimacy, FirmTech allows men to experience pleasure, perform better, and enhance their orgasm in a sleek, comfortable design. Using FirmTech's award-winning tech ring, men get objective, personal information about their erections, both during sex and while they're sleeping. This is actionable data that goes straight to the app for confidential analysis and feedback in the comfort of your home. Get your erection fitness score today, because every man deserves to know. Their easy on-off hook, comfortable stretchy elastomer, and penoscrotal design elevate this ring above the others on the market. Go to myfirmtech.com and enter code NOTBROKEN for 15% off today.
And so, you know, one of the questions I've had in, and I get asked this a lot in a way, and it's very, you know, I often think there's no sort of black and white answer. I just want to know what your thoughts are. You know, somebody's asked a question, what are considered normal ranges of free total testosterone for women? And what is, I suppose, the next part of the question is something we can discuss separately, is, and what is its safest form?
Yeah. I mean, people will give you vague answers to that question, I think, for a couple of reasons. I think, number one, we don't have a lot of research on what normal is. Normal fluctuates during when you're cycling, right? Your testosterone is highest when you ovulate. So there is no, and this is me after reading a lot of research, there's no normal in, like, what's your normal estrogen when you're 27? Well, where are you in your cycle? Are you pregnant? Right? Like, there's so many things that this whole normal. And I think what people are asking is they want to try to be normal. Right. And so I'm like,
I think that's a good point, that they want to try and be normal. And also, the normal is a range. You know, one of the things I say to women is the normal is a range, and the normal for you and the normal for me can be quite different. Also, testosterone can be bound. A total testosterone level could come back looking, you know, at the upper end of normal, but your free active testosterone, you know, your free androgen index can be much lower. So in the sense of, you may not be getting the benefits of your testosterone because much of it could be bound in sex hormone binding globulin.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So yeah, it's a longer answer to the question because of all those caveats. And I always tell people, I don't treat you to try to get you to a level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I treat you for symptoms,
yeah.
And then I'll use levels to make sure we're not going too high,
yeah.
Right? If you still have, like, for example, a woman's like, I think I want more, you know, but then I'll check her levels and be like, it's actually pretty high. Your symptoms are probably not because of low testosterone, right? And so I'll use it
that way. Really good point. You know, and that's the same thing, you know, to ensure that your levels aren't, you know, one of the reasons for testing is to ensure that your levels aren't physiologically high. And sometimes I think people can put down their symptoms always onto their hormones and forget about environment, forget about the relationship. You know, sometimes there are, you know, sort of unseen, unsaid things between a couple in a relationship. And these are things that impact libido and your ability to get aroused and orgasm. And I think communication and understanding that aspect is key. And like you, sometimes measurement of a level is to then almost like to sort of eliminate a cause. And so look, and sort of, because it's much easier in some ways in all of our heads. And I'm going to say I'm the same person here. You know, we all are, you know, to treat an organic cause, you know, to treat a number or something that you can get your hands onto rather than thinking, well, actually, is there something else going on? Am I not sleeping or have I got financial stresses? Because, you know, most of us at some point in our lives will have a loss of libido, but there could be multiple different factors going on. And I think that also, you also, one of the reasons I check levels is to ensure that we're not going to cause any side effects. And one of the biggest side effects, I think, for some women, you know, especially in perimenopause and menopause, would be hair thinning and hair loss on your head and hair in other places that you don't want it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we see over here, because we have failed to give women physiologic dose testosterone, our FDA's failed to provide a product, our insurance doesn't cover a product. So women go out and they get pellets. And this is my analogy is if I take you from sea level to Everest Base Camp, it feels kind of crappy, right? So the pellets can go very high. You can have high side effects. Yeah. You can't reverse them. I do think some women do better at higher levels, but we got to get you there slowly because your hair will fall out. They're very upset.
And look, I can talk from experience, actually, you know, but when I was probably about 10 years ago and I saw a gynecologist and he sort of talked me into having a pellet at the time. And one, I have to admit, you know, I was horny as hell, okay, off the scale to the point that I was running on the treadmill to keep myself sort of calmed down. But the other thing I really lost was a lot of hair. You know, I lost a lot of hair at the time. You know, some of it's come back, some of it's restored, but it's nowhere near where it was at that point. And that's my biggest thing. You know, hair loss and hair thinning affects women's confidence and mental health, you know, their self-esteem so significantly around this time that the last thing I want is for somebody to suffer that side effect. So, you know, I would prefer to go a little bit lower and slower than rather sort of rushing. Let me ask you a specific question, because somebody asked, and I think you're the perfect person to answer this, is how does or does testosterone help with genitourinary syndrome of menopause?
So our genital tissues, clitoris, vulva, labia, vagina, there's androgen receptors everywhere down there.
Yeah.
So estrogen works, but androgens also work. Now, we have one product in the U.S. It's called Intra-Rosa, or it's intravaginal, yeah. DHEA.
Yeah.
DHEA is a precursor hormone, and it goes to androgens and estrogens. It makes beautiful vulvas and vaginas. Like,
yeah.
This is an amazing medication. You can also get, I do often a compounded estrogen testosterone cream. Really helps with, you know, if you have clitoral atrophy, decreased sensation, testosterone can really help down there. And there's some women that just don't respond quite as well to a pure estrogen product as they do to adding an androgen to it. And that is local testosterone, not systemic testosterone.
We don't have that here, but, you know, but very much like you, I do often advise a estrogen cream, you know, using it almost like a moisturizer for the clitoris, for the vulva, for the labia. And that does help, you know. Yes, it doesn't work for every single woman, but for a lot of women, it can help to enhance and, you know, sort of sensation, and also help to improve blood flow, circulation, and plump things up a little bit. And also, you know, like you said, testosterone within the vaginal walls really does help with that sort of vaginal environment, and really helps with lubrication, sensation, and, you know, really can enhance that. This is an interesting question, because I get asked this, and I have a one-to-one discussion with with each woman individually. Thoughts on testosterone use post breast cancer while taking aromatase inhibitors? And I know there are some studies going on at the moment on this as well.
So that's a great question. So for people to understand, what aromatase does is it converts testosterone to estrogen. So if you're on an aromatase inhibitor, you're not going to convert any of your testosterone to estrogen, right? You're going to take testosterone, your body's going to use testosterone, you're not going to convert it. Testosterone, multiple studies have been shown that it does not increase your risk of breast cancer. We have, I would say, a good amount of safety data on this at this point. So we know testosterone's safe. We also have papers. There's this amazing paper looking at musculoskeletal pain in breast cancer survivors on aromatase. Because we know when we block our estrogen and have low testosterone, we get muscle aches and pains. So they did this. They had women on aromatase inhibitors and they gave them testosterone. Now, it's an interesting paper, because the paper says it did not improve musculoskeletal pains with aromatase inhibitors, but it improved lean body mass, mood, hot flashes. Like, testosterone improves many, many things. And to me, I'm like, if you're miserable, talk to your doctors.
Yeah, yeah.
You might have to talk to a couple of them, but I've got data to say it's safe now. Certainly, if a woman came to ask me, I would run it by their oncologist and educate them, because they might not know these papers. But
and
to
I,
me, I'm like,
I
more and more and more. Quality of life matters.
I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's quality of life, you know, and I think having that sort of informed conversation with each woman is really important. I see a number of patients who are breast cancer survivors, you know, who are on aromatase inhibitor treatment. We have this conversation, just like you said. And, you know, we talk about testosterone being so much more than libido. You know, it helps with energy levels, sort of mood, motivation. So I've had women who've had breast cancer and say to me the worst thing about breast cancer was coming off their hormone treatment. You know, because, you know, everything went dry, you know, they didn't feel like themselves, you know, they got so many different symptoms, you know, they just felt tired, you know, and they felt unable to then talk to their doctors to sort of say, look, this is where I'm feeling, because they felt they should just be grateful for having had their breast cancer treated. So actually, you know, I found that the testosterone works better if we can have estrogen on board. However, it works well on its own too. And I do prescribe testosterone to those women in early perimenopause who may not need estrogen and progesterone, so just testosterone on their own, because they come in telling me they are feeling you know, sort of demotivated, tired. That, again, it's not all about sexual function. It's about their quality of life. Their body mass or their body composition is changing. And then also those women who are sort of that postmenopause or who have had breast cancer treatment, you know, who are missing out on their sex life, you know, or feeling that they're gaining weight, you know, or and their metabolism slowing. They feel that brain fogginess. In your view, do you, on those patients, do you put them, run them at a slightly higher level?
I mean, I think they do. And again, I get them there slowly, right?
Yes,
I put them on the standard dose. We can always go back up. But I think it's an important point because so many, like the myth is ovaries and adrenals will keep making testosterone after your periods are done. And so they'll say, well, estrogen goes off a cliff, but then testosterone kind of does a slow. And I'm like, not in my experience. There are many perimenopausal women with very low testosterones. And
yeah.
So I don't always believe that graph where the testosterone's falling down like over here. I'm like, no, it's falling down over here for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a conference, the European and Andropause Menopause Society last year, and there was actually a speaker from the US, and she'd gone into an earlier menopause, and she said actually she felt that, you know, we should be almost reversing things and starting women off on testosterone and then adding the estrogen and then, you know, and then adding the estrogen and progesterone. And that really sort of helped to change the way I thought about a number of things. And I was at the International Menopause Conference once, and a male gynecologist sitting next to me from Australia said, you know, he put his wife was on testosterone from her, you know, 41, 42 years of age, because she just felt she was lacking that energy and strength and stamina. You know, again, it was not to do with sex and libido. And I think you're going back to your point that we have these androgen receptors all over our bodies. And I think it's just the fact that there's not so much research is being done on midlife women. You know, the money hasn't been sort of pumped into us. That's why, you know, we're lagging and not getting what I think is the care that we deserve.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's nuts that libido is the only approved indication for testosterone. No. First of all, libido is mood, right?
Yes.
So like libido is the brain. The brain is
and energy
mood.
And sleep and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So Australia is currently doing testosterone studies looking at sarcopenia and looking at mood. So like, I'm just waiting for that to come out because for people to say we don't have data is insane at this point. Like we do, there are studies. We've been putting women on testosterone since the 40s.
Yes.
You know, every time I read a paper that says we don't have enough data, I'm like, are you just not looking? Let alone bone health. There's a paper looking at estrogen alone versus estrogen and testosterone for bone health. And the combo has better bone strength than the estrogen alone.
Okay, so let's ask another question. And I like this question because I get asked, because here in the UK, we have testosterone in the form of a cream, which comes from Australia, the Androfem cream. Yep. And then we have the gels, which are the license for men, but then we titrate and tweak for women, like Testogel, yep. Testlim, and Tostran. But, you know, what about DHEA versus testosterone? So oral DHEA versus transdermal testosterone.
Yeah, So DHEA in America is a supplement, right?
Okay.
So you can buy it like a vitamin at the health food store. The problem with that is it's a completely unregulated industry. The problem with our supplements is I can't tell you that what it says on the label is what's in the product. So that's our problem with DHEA is like buyer beware. It might be 25 milligrams, but who knows?
Okay.
So that's my one issue with DHEA over here, besides the vaginal DHEA, which is a prescription strength. So that is what you get. In my experience in DHEA, you're going to get a rise in testosterone and estrogen. I think it's better in the perimenopausal women when you still have the factories, you know, working, but it's not huge spikes. I don't think it's harmful. As a prescriber, it's not my first go-to. But if people want to try DHEA at home and see if it makes them feel better, like, I don't think you're going to hurt yourself.
I think it also takes time. There was some Italian research and studies looking at sort of 10 milligram and 25 milligram doses. And it does take about 6 months, really, to sort of for you to to, you know, sort of notice any difference. Whereas with testosterone, we tend to say about sort of you should start to notice some difference within sort of 3 months. You know, in my experience, what I find is the younger woman, the perimenopausal woman, you'll probably notice a difference a bit or notice the effects of testosterone a little bit sooner within those 3 months. And with the postmenopausal, the older woman, I usually give it at least 6 months before I sort of give up and sort of, or not give up, but sort of say maybe there are other things going on and it's not necessary testosterone that's needed. Or, you know, the answer, you know, I sometimes have women sort of say, look, and I've had some questions saying, you know, I've been taking testosterone for or applying it for the last 6 months, I've not noticed a change in my libido. And I think, again, it goes then goes back to the question, well, actually, are there other things going on? You know, let's break it down. You know, I often talk about, you know, sort of hormonal health like a sponge cake, a layer cake, you know, that there are loads of different layers and hormones are one aspect of it. There are lots of other things going on and maybe we should be addressing part of those as well.
Yeah, I mean, libido is so wonderfully complex, right? Like I had a woman ask for testosterone for libido. She was in marriage counseling. She was getting a divorce. And like she had significant relationship issues, right? And it's like hormones are not miracle workers. They are wonderful, but they're not miracle workers. The other thing for if it's not working in 6 months, that's when I would check levels. Are they absorbing it? You know, things like that. In America, just as far as like to answer the question of how to get your testosterone, in America, we can compound injectables.
Okay.
And they're coming out with a low dose oral form, safe, undecanate oral form at the end of the year. It's going to be expensive, but there's going to be more and more different ways to get a physiologic dose so that women aren't, the pellet companies are massive companies because our traditional healthcare system is failing to take care of women.
If you're over 40, you might be in perimenopause or menopause. Perimenopause is the time leading up to menopause, where your hormone levels start to decline, and it can last up to 10 years. If you're experiencing symptoms like irregular periods, mood swings, forgetfulness, anxiety, sleep disruption, or hot flashes, it might be time to talk to a doctor. Alloy is a new kind of women's health company, here to help you feel your best and stay healthy through perimenopause and beyond. From hormonal treatments to symbiotics to skincare, they have what you need to age healthfully. Alloy doctors are licensed in all 50 states, and all practitioners are menopause trained. Work with a doctor to get a personalized treatment plan. And once you're a member, you'll get everything shipped to your door, including automatic refills. And you'll get unlimited messaging with your doctor, who can answer any questions you have as they come up. Go to myalloy.com to start your virtual appointment today. Use code NOTBROKEN20. It's good for $20 off any purchase, one-time use per customer, and expires on July 31st, 2024. Vaginal dryness is the most common symptom of the genital urinary syndrome of menopause, or GSM for short, which is the thinning, drying, and inflammation of the vaginal walls and vulvar tissue because of lack of estrogen. I'm a strong believer of vaginal estrogen as first-line treatment for GSM. Sometimes I do have patients prefer not to use vaginal estrogen or need more moisture in between doses. For these patients, I recommend VIA Vaginal Moisturizer from Solve Wellness. This non-hormonal hyaluronic acid-based vaginal moisturizer helps supplement the body's naturally occurring supply of moisture. pH balanced for the vagina, it is designed to soothe and condition dry and irritated skin. VIA can be used in conjunction with vaginal estrogen on off days for extra support. To learn more about VIA from Solve Wellness, visit viaforher.com. That's VIA, the number 4, her.com. viaforher.com. All new customers get 30% off their first purchase, automatically applied at checkout. Check it out.
Also, with the transdermal versus the oral, are we able to control the levels better, though, transdermally because of the bioavailability, you know, of oral ingestion is going to be different?
We're going to have to see with this product. So this product, it's unique. So it goes through your lymphatic system, not your liver. So you're not going to get liver. That's why we traditionally don't have oral testosterone, right? Liver toxicity. So it'll be interesting to see what this product's going to offer.
Okay. And I think, you know, for those women who haven't noticed a difference on their preparation of testosterone, because I've got some questions in sort of saying, I'm on Testagel prescribed by my GP, my testosterone levels were low, but feel no different. Should I be on a higher dose? I think that sometimes women do underdose, and I've seen this a lot, you know, when, because we don't, especially with the Testagel sachets and the sort of versions licensed for men, because there's no sort of measure as such, and we're using a pea-sized measure, you know, often I do find women are using maybe like a petit pois rather than a pea, and we need to sort of be, you know, I was almost going to say it's homeopathic, because the dose is so small that they're applying, they're really not getting the benefit. So I think you do need to, and here in the UK, what we tend to do is to measure levels after about 3 months if things aren't working. And I think that it would be appropriate to do so when someone says they're applying it, but they're saying they're not feeling the benefits. And also, again, to answer Caroline's question, it's not just about your total testosterone, Caroline. It's about your free androgen index. So when you're measuring testosterone levels, we should also be measuring things like sex hormone binding globulin. We should be working out what your free androgen index is to see actually, you know, even though you say you're applying the right dose, are you getting that, is it, you know, within your body, or is a lot of it still bound? And the other thing when women are on testosterone sometimes is if they are on an oral form of estrogen, it's better to change them to testosterone so that their SHBG maybe not as high, so they get more of that free testosterone. So there are a few tweaks that, Caroline, that you can do. You know, if you are on an oral HRT preparation, maybe we change to a transdermal, and then you might find your testosterone levels start to come up or feel more effective.
Yeah, and I would add, you know, again, another myth is that testosterone is the hormone of desire. There are many women who get on estrogen and they're like, I'm good. My desire's back. Yeah. You know, and I think we've labeled these hormones as this one's for this and that one's for that. And they're very complementary and they're not the same in everybody.
And that leads us on to a really good question because one of the things I also, a lot of people like on social media, they hear testosterone. And like you said, they think it's a hormone of desire or it's, you know, every woman should be on it. But actually, you know, many, and I see this in clinic, many women feel great, you know, just when they start on estrogen because they're sleeping better, they're less tired, they've got more energy, their hot flushes and sweats are calmer. So, and not every woman benefits from testosterone. Not every woman, you know, gets this sort of spark or changes in the way that maybe you hear some celebrities speaking or some people speaking. And I think that's also normal because we're all very different.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we are at least 10 years, it's going to come, but I think we are, it's too soon to start saying, should we be taking hormones for preventative health? Yeah. Now, testosterone is very, very interesting. We've got decent papers saying women who have normal physiologic testosterone, they have less risk of breast cancer. They have less risk of heart disease. But we can't take that and say everybody should be on testosterone for preventative health. But I think about that because a woman's like, I'm totally happy on estrogen. Should I do testosterone? And I would say right now, most people would say no. But I always think testosterone's healthy for us. Are we going to get to that point? Are we going to get to that conversation in 10 years from now? I hope so.
Well, I also get asked the question by some women as well who maybe don't have many perimenopausal or menopausal symptoms is, should I be on hormone treatment for primary prevention? So what's like on estrogen and progesterone, you know? So what are your thoughts on that, Kelly?
For vaginal, I think we've got good data to say you can be on vaginal estrogen for prevention. There's just a new paper that just came out saying if we put every postmenopausal woman who's on Medicare, which is our, you know, state national insurance for the elderly, if we put every postmenopausal woman on vaginal estrogen, we would save Medicare billions of dollars annually just in urinary tract prevention alone. Urinary tract infection prevention.
And this is something, you know, I often talk about vaginal estrogen that, you know, women should be almost like given it in a little goodie bag as soon as they turn 40. I mean, I don't know if you in the US have things like bounty packs. When you're pregnant, you get given a little sort of hamper of, you know, nappies and things. So I almost feel that we should be given this sort of, and maybe this is me showing my age, because maybe nowadays young women don't get, you know, bounty packs or anything when they get pregnant. But I almost feel that we turn 40, we should be given this little, almost like this bounty pack with vaginal estrogen being a part of it. Because I think that this is also a myth we need to dispel, that vaginal changes don't happen when you're old. Somebody in their sort of 70s plus, they start to occur much earlier, much sooner. And especially even in younger women who are on the combined oral contraceptive pill, many of them are experiencing, you know, sort of vulvovaginal dryness, recurrent thrush, recurrent UTIs because of the low estrogen. So I think, you know, we should be looking at that almost like as we put moisturizer on our face, we should be looking after, you know, our vulvovaginal health in the same kind of way. And as you said, you know, it's good to know that there are papers out there to sort of say that we should be looking at it from a preventative health point of view, you know, to prevent UTIs. And with that means less antibiotics, less changes to the gut microbiome, you know, all of those positives that can come from just managing those symptoms. Well, look, I could talk to you forever, Kelly, you know, and I really, really enjoyed our conversation. And I think it's really nice to have sort of a rational conversation around testosterone and talking about it from a health, physical health, but also from, you know, a quality of life, you know, what possibly could be happening in the future as well. And maybe we can do a part two at some point, you know, that would be amazing.
It's so fun for me to connect with people who are in different countries, seeing the same thing, thinking the same way. I love it. It's so cool. We're all trying our best to take care of
it, isn't it? It's a power. I mean, like, we would never have connected otherwise. And I likewise, I was thinking, gosh, we're talking across, you know, continents here and things like that. And then talking about things that we both feel really passionate about. And, you know, I love your posts, and I love, you know, let me just see if there's another couple of questions that come in that we can ask. Someone said, and I don't know if you've heard of this, because I've never heard of this, Kelly, my doctor gave me a testosterone trough that dissolves under the tongue. I feel like I'm shedding a lot more hair. Is that possible? Have you come across that?
Yeah, so that's very common in America. Again, because we don't have good products for women, we compound that. And so that's a compounded product. You just put it in your cheek. My guess is her doses are, she's going way too high. Right. And again, you need somebody who knows what they're doing, that doesn't want to get you too high, because this woman will stop taking hormones because her hair falls out and she'll miss all the benefits of an appropriately dosed testosterone product.
And that's such a good point that you make there. And that's one of the reasons why I start off a little bit lower, because I know that she could benefit from the hormones. And the last thing I want is for somebody to get side effects, which then puts them off when actually in the long run, they will benefit. And when I say, you know, we go slow, I don't mean we're taking years. We're just taking a couple of extra months to get there, you know.
Right.
And so I just want to say that to people out there, you know, if you do want to book in, if you do want to come, make an appointment, then do email. But, you know, it's not a question of you have to wait months and months and months. It's just about ensuring that you don't get any side effects before we go up a dose or increase the dose. Because ultimately, you know, as we've been talking, women can really benefit from hormone treatment, and it can really help to improve their quality of life and empower them.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we haven't talked about, but it's the amazing brain effects that women are coming, you know, they come in and they're like, I'm faster. I'm thinking like I thought when I was 30, math is easier again. Yeah. Like the fog has been lifted, the veil's been lifted. Like the things that they say as far as mental clarity, I'm like, it's insane to me that this isn't more widely talked about.
And maybe that could be our part two, because I'm totally in agreement with you, because I think we've got so much of a life to live. And to be fair, you know, one of the things I often say is it's one of the reasons how I do what I do, because I'm on my hormones. When my hormones started to decline, one of my big symptoms was that brain fog, feeling slower, less sharp, you know, less sort of on the ball. And I was thinking, am I going to be able to carry on as a doctor? Am I love being a doctor? You know, how's that going to affect me? And now here I am sort of powering through and enjoying that next phase of life. And I really want other women to appreciate and feel that if that's what they want. And also it's great in the grander scheme of things, you know, and that's why governments need to take note from an economy wise as well.
Well, yeah, I think the UK is ahead of the US looking at the economic impact of untreated menopause. Yeah. Of like, if you don't feel like you can be at your job, that's a profound impact for both you, your family, the country, the economy. And I mean, it comes down to like women feeling like themselves.
Yeah.
They come back and they say, I feel like myself. And I'm like, you can't measure that in a study. It's very hard to measure. But I would argue it's the most important thing.
And, you know, the simple measure, simple things. Sometimes I've had a woman say, look, you know, I went on a walk and I was able to walk further. I was able to cycle. I felt stronger. It's not about being a power lift or anything. It's just about feeling that they've got stamina, energy, you know, that they can sit at the table in a way and hold their own. So thank you so much for joining me from all the way over there. Really appreciate it. And like I said, maybe we can do a part two and focus on brain next time. So that would be amazing.
That'd be
thank
great.
You.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of You Are Not Broken. If you want to dig deeper with me, sign up for my Adult Sex Education Masterclass, where you learn adult things like communication skills, anatomy lessons, and desire types, and how to talk to your doctor about sexual health concerns. If you want the Adult Sex Education Masterclass for free, join my monthly membership for more in-depth, exclusive content, more time with yours truly, a private podcast, coaching, and educational empowerment. And you can watch my interviews live and get them immediately without advertising. Head over to www.kellycaspersonmd.com for the membership and adult sex ed masterclass. Members get the masterclass for free. This podcast is presented solely for educational, entertainment, and informational purposes only. I am a doctor, but not your doctor in this format. And all of my platforms and guests, including on this podcast, are not giving individual medical advice or practicing medicine. See and consult with your own care team for your individual needs and concerns. This podcast is not intended as a substitute for the care and advice of a physician, therapist, or other qualified professional. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine, in case you were curious about that, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. But I still love you. Using the information on this podcast or any of my platforms is at your own risk. Until next time, remember, you are not broken.